This is the Cubs-related podcast. Tonight is July 7th. The Cubs reach the 500 marker yet again by beating the Pittsburgh Pirates. Bryant hit two homers. Rizzo hit a homer. The two of them supplied all the runs today. It's been a weird week again. They played the Rays to start off the week. They had that one game makeup game against the Brewers, and now they have the Pittsburgh series to finish off before the All-Star break. So with me is Corey. We're first going to get into the Verlander trade talk, because I think that's kind of dominating some of the discussions around Cubs blogs and discussion forums. And then we'll get into the remainder of the Pirates series. So Corey, what do you got?
Well, man, this is just such a weird season, man. and I think we all, you know, we didn't really need it, but I think we all really needed that game the other day against the Brewers. I think we needed a day where we just sit there and watch it burn, you know,
just and,
you know, and yeah. And I mean, hope that that's the low point. Sometimes you gotta, you know, get that kicked out of your system, I guess. But
it's funny too, because Madden had a team meeting before that game. Did you read about that?
Yeah,
and it came out like
didn't
that.
Work.
It's well, kind of funny.
Yeah, man, that was rough. I mean, that was just one where it was like, all right, we're just wearing this one.
Yeah,
but yeah, I don't know. It's a weird spot. I mean, and you know, we really. I mean, this is really like, what is this? The 20th time they've been 500. I mean,
it's
really
every
crazy.
Day.
And you know, now they have to sweep Pittsburgh to end up over 500 at the break, which is definitely not a statement I thought I would find myself uttering at any point. And you know, here we are, right?
Yeah. So Theo is on. Theo's been doing a lot of different interviews because of the Schwarber call up, and we'll talk about that as well, because that was news from the last time we talked to you guys. So Theo is talking to the Spiegel and Park show. They always do great interviews, by the way. So if you ever listen to them on the Score, take notice, because there's a lot of good stuff coming out from their interviews. So Theo is talking today about how he essentially, as Evan Altman, a Cubs insider, put it, how he bears responsibility for the 500 team. But what's interesting, Corey, that is he basically said that everything, like the team is basically set as is. He may make a trade or two or whatever, but he reiterated that the talent is set there to win. So it was, to me, of like one statement saying, "Well, this is my fault. The team is 500," but at the same time, he's like, "Well, this team won over 200 games in the past 2 years, largely the same group, and the outside help isn't going to do much of good." And it doesn't exclude the fact that they may go out and get someone like a Justin Verlander, but it's been, you can tell Theo has been a little agitated. I don't know if you listened to that particular interview or some of the interviews before the game when they were discussing Schwarber, but I don't even think Theo knows what the hell is going on. I think he's almost in the same boat with us, because we didn't really expect any of this. And then talking about Verlander, I don't know what your thoughts are on Verlander. I mean, he's not my main trade target per se, but any general thoughts? I mean, are you gung-ho on getting someone like a Verlander?
Well, I think that Verlander comes up because I think that's kind of what Theo's getting at, where he's like, you know, look, like when you look at the market and you look at what's available, like there's probably not going to be one person who is just going to turn this around. And, you know, even if you look at someone like Marcus Stroman or Kurt Archer, like, yeah, they would make a big impact, but exorbitant price to pay to get them. And, you know, still you're still talking about guys that are only pitching every fifth day. You know, it's not like you put Marcus Stroman on the team and all of a sudden, you know, now the offense is not leaving guys and runners in scoring position. Marcus Stroman is not pitching for everyone else every day. You know what I mean? So, yeah. I think that's sort of what he's getting at. You know, as far as Verlander's concerned, I mean, I think it's interesting. You know, his stuff, his velos look to be like kind of still there. You know, it seems that command is a major issue for him. And it, you know, it does sound like perhaps it's a move you can make where, you know, you wouldn't necessarily need to be considering as strong of an offer from the Cubs' perspective. And if you can get Detroit to take some money and, you know, Alex Avila, you know, would be, I would assume, involved as well, you know, to kind of take over that veteran catcher role. Right. I don't have a problem with it. I mean, I'm typically, you know, still a fan of if you can get him for a cheaper price and throw him to Bazio and see what happens, like, I'm in for it.
So his contract,
I was just going to say, like, I'm not like thrilled about it. Like, I don't know, you know, cause it's kind of exactly that. It's like, I don't know how thrilled I am about a trade where my first reaction is, all right, well, Bazio, see what you can do.
Especially,
you know,
cause that's someone who's owed $70 million through 2019.
We're going to pay a lot of that.
I think we will.
All right.
I mean, I'd rather
give up good prospects.
I mean, that's what I think they're going to do. I mean, you have Lackey and you have Arrieta coming off the books. That's $27 million in total right there. All that will go to Verlander's contract if they do want to do that. I don't know. I guess the more I kind of step back and look at all the possibilities of how the Cubs can shore up their pitching staff, I mean, it is a huge concern, not only for this year, but the year after. With Arrieta being gone. So for 2 years and $28 million for a guy who has a pretty long track record of success, and at least from a velo point of view, he doesn't look like he's showing any signs of significant attrition. I don't know. I think I've grown to like the idea more. At first I was like,
I mean, I don't hate it.
Yeah. And I've been reading reports from like Buster Olney, who suggested that they still, and by they I mean the Tigers, they still want to have a pretty substantial package of players back in return.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Especially for someone, because I think Verlander's ERA is bordering 5
this
year. So that's just not going to happen.
As one of his fantasy owners, I can tell you it is definitely bordering.
And he was my first pitcher, actually, I picked in my fantasy team. Yeah. So I share exactly right. But I don't think it's going to cost someone like an Eloy Jimenez it may cost someone like a Jaime Candelario, but in terms of, you know, the big boys in the Cubs system, like Eloy and Dylan Cease, et cetera, I don't think it's going to cost that. So I've grown to like it. And I think it's a good idea for 2018 and 2019 as well. Do you think it will actually happen? Do you think the Verlander thing is just a smokescreen for, I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, you know, it makes sense. Cause I mean, basically what the problem is going to be is, you know, you have a team like Tampa Bay who right now, as we just saw, cause the Cubs just played them, like they're in the playoff race. Like they're over 500. They're playing well. I don't think it's a guarantee that they're going to sell, and the price for Chris Archer is going to be very high. And, you know, the same goes for Marcus Stroman. And, you know, this is one of those things where it's intriguing enough. I mean, I think the reason that it's, you know, not something that everybody's super thrilled at is, you know, for a lot of the stuff we've already mentioned. You know, I mean, he's got an ERA that's, you know, close to Lackey's. And, you know, is having command problems, which we already have plenty of. You know, I don't know that anybody's jonesing for more guys with command issues. You know, and I think that right now, especially to the general fan base, the Cubs feel like they're in a position where, you know, we need a more like concrete answer here, like someone who's just good, like no questions asked. Like, but, you know, the state of things is that might not be readily available, and and these things change by the year. You know, there's some years where there's a plethora of this at the deadline. There's some years where there's a plethora of offense, or, you know, like last year it was relief pitchers, and it you know, it's like everything else in baseball, it ebbs and it flows. So I think it's definitely possible. I mean, there's an awful lot of smoke around this right now. I mean, there's definitely a lot of talk about this. Doesn't mean it's going to happen, but it just,
you know, it's coming from big, big names too.
Yeah, like, and know, it like just, Bruce, you know, it makes then, enough sense, especially yeah. when you'd be probably packaging him with Avila. You know, you can kind of kill two birds with one stone there if you're the Cubs. And, you know, I don't know what the plan would be beyond that, but...
In terms of, you know, what, and, next year, you mean?
No, I just mean, like, how the rotation would fill out or what you'd be doing with everybody.
I would imagine Lackey would be just gone.
but, you know, part of that, too, is, and, you know, people may not want to hear it, but, you know, say they went out and they got Verlander. Like, I think that they would look at a rotation of Lester, Arrieta, a returning and hopefully healthy Hendricks, whatever, you know, we're obviously not sure to what level that would be. You know, you throw Verlander in there and you keep Montgomery in there. I think that the Cubs front office is looking at that going like, that should be good enough, you know, and we can't, you know, make super drastic moves and like move the entire organization around because this particular year is on the ropes. And I not to like back this out, you know, to the bigger level, but this is just by like, this season just isn't going well. It doesn't mean that like the plan was wrong or, you know, that all these players that they built around are suddenly bad and all that stuff. It just isn't going that well, you know, and you can't, you know, sometimes you have to remember, like, we believed in the process for a very long time and it paid off like very, very well over the last 2 years, like 85 games or whatever it is by the time we get to the All-Star break doesn't mean you abandon all that just because in one particular year it's not going as well.
I saw some discussions.
That's why the Verlander thing makes sense to me because you don't know if it's going to work, and obviously we'll have to see what the price ends up being, but you know, if they were able to put that rotation together of those five guys, like I think you'd be looking at that going like, this is probably the best we can do to try to help this year, but without like, you know, deviating from our whole process here just because this season is off to a, you know, obviously lackluster start.
And the Verlander deal would be not only for this season too, like, you know, you have two more years of the guy as well. So again, it does fit Theo's vision of acquiring players for not just this year, but in years to come to supplement what they're building around. So you can see the reasoning behind it. And I, to be honest with you, the more we talk about it, Corey, the more I'm actually growing to like the idea.
We're convincing each other right now.
Yes, we are. But, you know, pitching is so hard to get in general. And then when you factor in what the hell is going on in this year, it's like near impossible to get pitching. You know, we were talking about this beforehand, but I was shocked to see that the league average FIP this year is 4.36. Like, what? Like that's the highest, obviously, it's been in quite some time. It was only a few years ago when the league average FIP was 3.8. So, I mean, whatever the reasoning is for this offensive explosion, maybe, whether it's the juiced ball or just a surplus of really good young hitters coming into the league like Bellinger and Judge and whatever, this is the nature of the game right now. It's difficult to find pitching. Not only are the Cubs struggling with pitching, but the general league is struggling with pitching outside of Arizona and Los Angeles. So everyone's looking for pitching. And now that when you have Tampa Bay competing, maybe the only realistic options for cost-controllable pitching is Sonny Gray and
right.
Stroman. That's going to cost way more than Eloy. Okay, if you're going to have to do away with basically your top two or three prospects in your system, maybe more,
and so, potentially major league guys.
I mean, who knows how the market will develop? And that's what Theo said even today, that you know the market's still evolving, rightfully so, and teams are still deciding what they want to do in the next 2 weeks. So it's like even for Theo, like we've seen the Cubs make moves. Like Chapman was acquired far before the deadline.
Mm-hmm.
Russell was acquired far before the deadline. That's usually their MO, is to get out in front. And the fact that they're not getting out in front to me, explains the very grim look on the pitching market.
Yeah, and you got to remember, like, and I know nobody wants to hear this, and this is not to excuse, you know, bad play, but this process is not a year-by-year thing. It's and Theo has said this 1,000 times. He said this at the start of all this, like, the goal is to compete every year. The goal is not to do everything, you know, you have to win the World Series every single year. That's not the point of all this. The point of all this is to put a system in place that creates a competitive team on a yearly basis, you know? So you got to remember when we go into this stuff, like, yeah, this team needs help, but you are always going to be considering, like, okay, fine, but this is a, you know, many year long thing, not just a 2017 thing. And,
yeah,
you know, that's kind of the point where it's like, if let's say Chris Archer was the only guy that was available that really fit their model of cost controlled pitching. Like, if the price is a certain way and your choice is, okay, do we like really go full on for 2017 and sacrifice some stuff that we've built and believe in for this, you know, this longer term thing, or, you know, or do we, you know, kind of let 2017 play out, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. I think they're going to err on the side of the latter, you know?
Yeah, I think that pitching, too, is going to rebound. I genuinely believe that. I think Arrieta will have a fine second half. He's pitched pretty well outside of that Washington game, I think, in the last month. Velo is getting stronger.
Well, and that was all stronger. Miguel Montero's fault, right?
Yeah.
And then, it wasn't. We love you, but, you know.
And then you have Hendricks coming back, and hopefully the velo is there. So even if you plug those guys in there with Lester, that's a formidable top three, and still one of the better top threes in all of baseball. So
right,
I think you're going to get some natural rebounding from these guys. And
well, so, and like to the some of the points, like when they came into the year, like this team last year, the starting staff, I think it was like through June or July, like had the best ERA like since World War II or something like that.
Lackey had an ERA under three, I think.
Yeah, of a starting staff. They were literally setting records. So yes, coming into the year, there was definite concerns over the starting pitching and depth as a starting pitching. But, I'm not a big fan of this, like, hindsight that Theo wasn't prepared or all this other stuff. It's like this rotation was great. This defense was great. And yes,
yeah,
you could have done something to solidify it or make it better. And you can say like, well, you know, are you counting on Lackey, this guy, the other? Like, that's fine. But, you know, to make these arguments that, you know, the Theo failed or, you know, they weren't prepared, it's like, I don't know, man. How much are you going to change to a team that just won the World Series? You know, like, how much are you going to start shipping people out and getting rid of prospects and all this other stuff? They were just really good. If they don't do it again, now you're in the part where you have to fix it. But sometimes, you know, you can't always like be in front of everything, you know, because it's like they just won the World Series. They were just one of the best rotations in franchise history. Like, maybe you're wrong to think that they would repeat it, but you're also like to expect them to be like, well, yeah, they just did that, but we got to really shake this up. It's not going to be good enough. Like, that's a lot to ask. You know?
He did that too. When I say he did that, he got out in front, I thought, in the past offseason, signing John Jay. Look at the role John Jay has played, especially with all the injuries to Zobrist and Hayward. And then look at what he did with the pitching. He went out and got my favorite, Eddie Butler. But at the time, and maybe down the road, he still pans out, but a young, talented pitcher with no past success in Major League Baseball, but nevertheless still talented. He got someone like an Alec Mills. He got Brett Anderson. He got Perez from Atlanta, who we've yet to see. Maybe we will see him. So I think Theo did a good job of, you know, acquiring all these types of high-risk, volatile pitchers that might stick. And the one quote that has recently come in my mind quite a bit in the past few weeks, especially with the Schwarber stuff and the pitching struggles, I forgot whose book it was, but Theo was quoted during his decision of drafting Schwarber saying, you know, Schwarber's going to be David Ortiz in left field and we can get pitching wherever. So Theo operates under the mindset that pitching is almost in a surplus and the talent pool is there. And my interpretation was that it's up to the development team to develop the pitching at both the major league level and the minor league level. But we've yet to see it at the minor league level. But, I mean, the proof is in the pudding with the major league development. Hendricks and Hamill and, list goes on. So I guess to circle this back around too, in terms of did Theo get out in front of this and should he give up major resources for this year to salvage this current record if we get towards the end of July and it's not looking good? I don't think he's going to deviate from his plan. I think his plan is always to have and sustain cost-controllable positional talent and then to supplement your entire team by either developing late or mid-round draft picks for pitching and going out and finding, you know, broken pitchers to a degree and fixing them up, which has worked. It's worked. But there's an argument to say on Twitter that the Cubs were built for the short term. And I and it was some people who I respect their opinions, but that's just crazy to me that the Cubs, some people would think they're built for the short term. Almost because of their negligence towards pitching. Look what happened to the Mets, Corey. They stacked up on pitching. Their entire rotation has hit the DL within the last 3 months. Like every single one of their five starters. So I'm not buying that. I know the Cubs are struggling this year.
But I've said this before, like, so not to repeat it, but I think part of that too is sort of along the lines of what I was just saying, but they won the World Series with that staff and a lot of young players. That doesn't mean that they looked at that and were like, oh yeah, we're perfect as an organization. Like we don't have to do anything. That's not what that means. But what it means is like, well, this team just won the World Series. Like, why would I go out if I'm Theo and start shipping people off, like trading Baez or trading Jimenez, all these other guys to like move stuff? They just won the World Series, you know, and you're looking at it, right? Like it's not going the same way. Okay. So now we have to like you're constantly reevaluating, but I just think like stuff like that insinuates, you know, that, they thought everything was perfect and they're like, yeah, this is the rotation we want for the next 20 years. You know, it's like, no, but this team just won the World Series. Like who in any sport is winning championships and doing their best to like screw with the roster, like immediately afterwards?
What are you going to do too? Are you going to, the team wanted to give Montgomery a chance. So what are you going to do? You're going to go and get rid of Lackey? You can't get rid of Lackey, right? So, I think they did a really good job in the offseason getting all these pitching possibilities. I think they really did a good job. And I think they identified the potential weaknesses. I also think, Corey, the injuries to Zobrist, the injuries to Hayward, Addy's issue, all of that has snowballed up and led to worse defensive play this year. So I think Madden is always preaching the defensive play and how he wants to see that get better, but Hayward's missed over 20 games. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of games. That's like, what is that, a fourth of the season so far? So
yeah, I mean, and I said this to you before, and again, it's not to excuse anything. It's not to like, make excuses for stuff. But this is just, this is baseball, guys. You know what I mean? Like, this is, it's a lot of baseball going on. You've got a lot of young guys who are making adjustments and being, you know, moved all over the field, moved all over the order, trying to make it work and stuff. You combine that with a pitching staff that has obviously regressed. You combine that with whatever's going on with the balls, you know, and you combine that with some, you know, runners and scoring position numbers that should stabilize. You're getting right now, at least like for them, you know, not like the best years of Rizzo and Bryant's career, although Bryant's numbers are still great. Like whether he's hitting like 260 or not, yeah, it doesn't matter.
Like, there's
But it's just like, you know, this is just like, this isn't, I think sometimes we try to ascribe a deeper meaning to things and they're just not playing as good at baseball. And that's how baseball is, you know, baseball's a fickle, there would be a, probably an expletive after that, but, you know, it's fickle, it's random, it's all sorts of things. And I don't, again, that's not to excuse it, like, oh, the Cubs are really good, but they're just getting unlucky. Like, that's not what I mean. It's just like, as Theo has said a million times, like, this stuff isn't linear, and it was all working and timed right and everything last year and over the last 2 years, really. And now a lot of it's happening the wrong way all at the same time. And there's, you know, I don't think that's kind of the thing with, you know, these Stroman and Archer things where it's like, how much do you really want to deviate from your process and, you know, give up on some of the cornerstones of what have gotten you to this point just because you've played like 84 games of blah baseball, right? Yeah. And I, you know, I just don't know, you know, and also I think when you're talking about stuff like that, and obviously we've derailed this from Verlander, but, you know, here we are. I mean, there's nothing, you know, there's nothing really, this is the main talking point. And I was actually wondering this the other day, like, I wonder if these shows are more interesting than last year. Because I feel like last year it was just like, wow, another, you know, another great series.
Brandon. Yeah, when do we start going to the six-man rotation? It's like,
isn't it fun winning every game by 10 runs? You know, like, yeah. But, you know, part of it too is like, okay, so if we really want to believe, as some would have you believe, right, especially in the Chicago media, which is really killing it these days, some really fine newspaper articles being written on a daily basis.
Why do you need to sleep?
Oh, God. I mean, Brendan, straight in the garbage. You know, if you really want to believe or think or even learn, lean towards like, okay, this team, like you were saying, was built for the not like you were quoting, is built for the short term, or some of these guys aren't very good, this, that, or the other. Like, all right, let's pause. What are we doing, right? Who are we giving up on? Who are we trading? Who isn't good? And I think those are questions. It's easy to throw out these narratives, right, that it's a championship hangover or Joe Maddon sucks or Theo Epstein sucks, whatever it is, right? But fine, but let's pause. And let's ask, what does that mean? And what does that mean for the organization going forward? Are you done with Addison Russell? Are you done with Javi Baez? What do you think about Albert Almora and Ian Happ? Like, you know, and Kyle Schwarber too. Like, everybody ragging on Kyle Schwarber for his performance this year is very fond of believing that his, you know, whatever it is, 70-game sample this year is legit. And we can make any conclusion we want out of it, how bad he is, how he's not a leadoff hitter, he's not a good hitter, all this other stuff. But the sample before that, from, you know, 2015 to the World Series, that you can't draw any conclusions of, right?
Yeah, but it's like, so you pick and choose what you want to, what you want
right.
to, what so you want to like, factor in.
I'm all, you know, that's I guess why I land on, you know, this is just baseball and this is not a linear process. And you have to just believe in what you're doing and why you have these players, why you drafted these players, why you believe in some of these players. And it's fine if you want to freak out and, you know, make all these conclusions, but you have to answer those questions though. You know what I mean? You can't just say like, oh, this team is bad. You know, they're average, whatever. This season is what it is. I hear that one a lot. You know, you might just have to accept that this is what this team is this year. And it's like, okay, but what do you want to do about it? You know, who are we moving? Who are which position on offense are you signing people or trading people to fix? You know, and I don't know that people like, are people like ready to give up on some of these guys? Like, just as an example, like what is Addison Russell, 23 years old? I mean, no, he has not been a good hitter at the major league level, but okay, so what's the conclusion there, I guess, is what I ask on a lot of these things. Like, we won an awful lot of games with him as our shortstop over the last few years. And I know a lot of scouts.
He's one of the best defenders in the league.
Fighters who believed in his skills for legitimate reasons. If you're done with him, right, for on the field, off the field, whatever you've decided, what's the play? You know, what's your move now? So I just think it's some of this, it's very easy to, you know, write a negative headline or, you know, a short burst of what you think is wrong and all that other stuff. But it raises some questions that you also have to be prepared to answer. Like, if you think this team isn't good or can't get better when everybody's healthy, all that other stuff, all right, well, then tell me what you want to do.
There's nothing that's going to be done anyway. Just sit back and enjoy the ride, honestly, right? Like, you're not going to trade Addy. You're not going to go out and trade Schwarber. Like, Theo's already said that those guys are staying. This is going to be the team. But let's move on and kind of discuss what happened in the week. There's always, like, I feel like every week there's something huge going on with this team. Schwarber called up yesterday. And if you're listening to this on a Saturday morning, he got called up before the Milwaukee game. And I guess I was surprised, Corey, because he made the trip to Oklahoma City and then was only there for one game, got called back up. So he had one base hit, I think, in 7 official at-bats. And had a double today, which was his first hit. I think we talked about it in the past, but just to summarize what Corey and I have discussed, Schwarber was doing very well in Iowa. He made a mechanical adjustment with his hands. Looks like he may have eliminated some of the upper body movement, according to Reigns, which is their AAA batting coach. I'm looking forward to that. And then I'll just summarize these last three games quickly, then we can move on a little bit. So they had an off day Monday. Tuesday they faced Tampa Bay. They lost 6-5. They made a small rally in the bottom of the ninth inning, coming back down 6-3. They scored 2. Hayward popped up for the last out of the game with a runner in scoring position, and they lost. They followed that up on Wednesday by winning 7-3. John Jay game. John Jay hit a game-tying three-run homer, I believe, in the sixth inning. They followed that up in the seventh inning with 2 runs, in the eighth inning with 2 runs. Ian Happ came up big in that game with a clutch 2-out hit. Or 2 RBI hit rather in the 7th inning to go ahead 5-3. Ian Happ's been playing great. That's another topic of itself. And then the Thursday Milwaukee game, which was over within 15 minutes. They lost 11-2. That's all you need to know about that.
On that one.
Yeah. John Jay pitched. He was throwing 55 miles per hour. That was entertaining. Rizzo had some good laughs watching that. And then the Friday game, they beat Pittsburgh. I'm blanking on the score. 6-1, they beat Pittsburgh 6-1. Again, Brian, 2 homers, Rizzo, a homer. All six of the runs were from the bats of those 2 guys. Butler looked, I think, 4 innings again. Madden with a quick hook, only 1 strikeout, 3 walks. Command issues. Not to beat a dead horse, but I'm over the Eddie Butler experiment when Hendricks gets back. So that kind of catches everything up, and then we'll go into the Pittsburgh series, which we'll get into. But so, Corey, from a game play point of view in these last 3 games, anything stand out for you?
I mean, not really. I think this this whole runners and scoring position thing is really testing, I think, everybody's patience. It's really absurd at times, the ways they manage to get out of innings that seemingly are guaranteed to yield runs, and they just can't push them across. But no, man, I think they got to get to the break. They got to shut it down for a few days and, you know, hope that people can come back refreshed a little bit and just clean it up a little bit. You know, like I said, that Milwaukee game was really something, especially because, you know, it's a makeup game and you're playing the team ahead of you. So a lot of people were, I don't know, I don't want to say excited, but, you know, looking at it like, okay, we can pick up a game on our own. You know, we just got to win the game. And like you said, that was over pretty quickly.
I didn't even see the game. Like, I was working at the time, and I came back to my computer to put the game on. And I'm like, what the hell? Like, 8-0 in the second? Like, so I didn't even turn that one on. That was bad.
That derailed pretty quick. And just you know, the only real, I mean, just an embarrassing effort by Jack Leathersich, who's, you know, now back in AAA. But man, and you know, you feel for the guy because you know, you're out there to just wear it. But I mean, he was walking runs in on the pitcher. I mean, just embarrassing is the only word for that. You know, so no good there. No, man, I mean, I think it's just, I mean, every day I don't really know, you know, you turn the game on and I don't really know what to even expect here. You know, it's also, it's like to the point too where you know things are, I guess, bad or interesting when like the other team scores in the first inning and, you know, Pat is like, you know, not being sarcastic about it, but you can just tell he has a tone where, you know, it's like, well, here we go again. And it's like, you know, man, when Pat Hughes is, you know, getting frustrated, you know, like outwardly frustrated and like kind of annoyed, like and poking fun at it, like,
and another run in the first,
you know, things are going. Yeah, I mean, it was like, I can't remember if it was, and maybe it was just like 2 days ago, but he's just like, it's so sarcastic, you know, like, and a base hit to left field and the Cubs are going to trail again. You know, it's like, God, man, you know, yeah. So I just think they need the break. And I mean, you know, the break doesn't, it's just a few days off. It doesn't like automatically solve anything or have any, you know, real visible, like tangible effect that we can tell. But I think this team just needs to get away from baseball, which is why I think a lot of us, I mean, I voted for him. I did the whole thing, but pretty relieved that Justin Turner won. He has better numbers than KB in the first place. And just go hang out with Mike, you know, Jess.
Watch some Netflix with Jess, right?
Yeah, just like, just relax. Jess, who, by the way,
great campaign, yes,
like murdering Twitter.
Did you see the pictures today that she posted?
Yeah, I mean, as a social media professional, I was really in awe. I was just like, wow. I mean, Bat Cubs is looking for an intern. They should hire Jess Bryant because she was trying to get those votes and she was providing the content to do it. So if you didn't look, I don't know her exact handle, but it's Jess Bryant. It's Chris's wife. So it's probably pretty easy to find. But she was posting some like high school pics of them.
That was great.
And stuff. It was great.
An all white suit rocking.
Yeah. And I mean, spoiler, Chris, the same goofy smile we all know and love. He was, you know, in pictures with his high school girlfriend. So, yeah, I mean, I think they just got to get to the break. You know, I think Lester's going to do his thing. And, you know, we were talking before too, like the starting pitching situation puts so much strain on someone like Lester where, you know, when he's not having a year like he did last year or in 2015, it kills us. You know, he needs to be perfect, you know, and that's a tough standard for a guy like that. And especially someone like Lester who, you know, and I say this all the time, you can tell right away, like if he's nipping at the edges and he's not getting them, like he's not going to be perfect. Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think Arrieta's in the right direction. I think that'll, you know, I think go in, you know, continue that way. Hopefully, you know, we don't need 2015 Arrieta. We just need not first half 2017 Arrieta.
Yeah, I mean, you get like a 3.5, 3.7 FIP from him, which I think is realistic. Then you're going to...
You know, we like what Montgomery's been doing, you know, that Brewer start, you know, notwithstanding, but that wasn't, you know, really the majority, like his fault.
Previous four starts were pretty good. So
yeah, you know, you hope you get, I know you have scoffed at this before, but you know, I said I would be fine hoping for or settling for a compromise of last year's Hendricks and this year's Hendricks. And you know, Lackey somehow or another manages to deliver a quality start every now and again. Like you're, you know, again, like, hey,
once every month and a half. What does that even mean?
Well, yeah, hey. Well, I'm just saying. At that point, you know, you're hoping he's the fifth guy. Just like go out and do it, like whatever. But, you know, and the offense just has to get it in gear, you know. But I think, you know, you come out in the second half with Hap, who's been playing really well. You know, he's got an OPS, I think, in the 900s, which is amazing for a guy who we weren't even really sure would still be with the team.
Third best hitter on the team.
Yeah. And, you know, and this is also a guy who's been playing multiple positions. He's been all over the lineup, and he just, you know, he manages to deliver. Hopefully Chris Bryant, you know, again, his numbers are still really good, whether he's hitting 260 or not. But, you know, you hope for more performances like today where he can just sort of carry the offense and put the team on his back, which I think Eddie Butler, that's like a quote from Eddie Butler, that he put the team on the back. You know, Rizzo to heat up a little bit. And, you know, you just, your guess is as good as mine as to what happens with some of these other guys, you know, Schwarber, Baez, Russell, et cetera. But look, this team is too talented to be where they are right now. That doesn't mean that they, you know, they're going to go on some tear in the second half and, you know, win 2/3 of the games or, you know, something like that. But I don't think that talent wise, they're an under or at 500 team. And, you know, you just got to hope that they can figure out a way to stop playing like it. And as many have said, Theo, Joe, all the players, like they deserve to be where they are right now. But I think talent wise, I don't think that that's where they are. And, you know, you just got to hope that that wins out at some point. And well, maybe it won't.
Yeah, I think it will. I really do. Their base runs record, which is like a expected win probability algorithm based on like WOBA and like linear weights and stuff like that. Anyway, they scale it to how many wins a team should have. And the Cubs, according to this model, should be 4 games above 500 at this point. So interpret that however you like, but if they were 4 games above 500, you know, they'd be 2 games back in Milwaukee. And they've been 4 games above 500, according to the base runs, for the past 4 or 5 days. So they've stabilized around that marker right now, which suggests to me some of the timely hitting hasn't been there, which we know is the case. And just some weird games, some weird randomness that we've seen. But so we have 2 more games, Saturday, Sunday against Pittsburgh. Do you have those matchups in front of you, Corey?
I do.
Let's hear it.
They're good. Which I guess I don't know if that's a good thing or not anymore. but tomorrow is Ivan Nova and Jake Arrieta in the rare but really fun Saturday night at Wrigley Field at 6:15 Chicago time.
Is that a Fox? Is that why they're doing that?
I would assume so.
Yeah, we're going to get blacked out, aren't we? Because of that Fox thing.
Well, I know how to use a VPN. I don't know about you. But
I know. But it's just a nuisance. It's just annoying to have to do it. Wait, do you use a VPN for your PS4?
No, on the computer. But this probably isn't good audio. But Sunday is Tyone and Lester, and that game is at 12:10 in Chicago.
You're gonna miss that game.
Well, no, I'm just saying that because that's a strange time for a game.
Maybe it's a TBS game. you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, no 120 games on the weekend. I'm just making sure I'm reading this right. I don't want to be, you know, providing any fake news to anybody. So, but yeah, so Saturday at 6:15, Sunday at 12:10, Nova, Arrieta, Tyone, Leicester. So, you know, good matchups. And like I said before, the Cubs have to win both of these games if they'd like to be above 500 at the break. That doesn't really matter. The Brewers, I guess, are what matter at this point. But yeah, you know, and then they'll send Wade Davis off to Miami, where I hope our own manager is nice enough to not, you know, make him pitch, but who knows anymore. And other than that, yeah, I mean, you just got to hope that everybody can go relax and refresh. And I know I was actually just looking, friend of the podcast, Todd, who writes for us at Cubs Insider, does a lot of really good prospect stuff at Cubs Central 08 on Twitter. Certainly better than any of us at understanding the prospects in the whole minor league system. So if you're into that sort of thing, shoot him a follow. But he tweeted out recently that in the second half, the Cubs only play teams with a plus 500 record. Six against the D-backs, 10 against the Brewers, 3 against the Nats, and 2 against the Rays. So, you know, and look, this is a team that got swept by the Padres. I'm not, you know, ignorant of that. So, like, don't, you know, not to take it that way. But like I said, the talent level of this team, especially relative to the rest of the National League, especially to the rest of the National League Central, they should be better than 500. They should be competitive. And I also want to clarify, the Brewers look good. There's a lot that doesn't look good with them. You know, like tonight, they only got 3 innings out of their starter. They made a ton of errors. They've been playing terrible defense, but they're winning games. And, you know, we're long past the point of taking them seriously. I don't think that they're a great team. I think the Cubs will, like I think I said the last time, like, if we go into the breakdown 4.5, which I believe is what it is right now, I would take the Cubs minus 4.5 games with 70 left. I would take that bet. I would take the Cubs to win that division. But, you know, the Brewers have a talented team. You know, Ryan Braun comes back. He's blasting homers. Like, this is not a team that is just, you know, I think ready to roll over and die. There was talk of them maybe being buyers at the deadline. You know, so the Cubs are going to have to, you know, stop screwing around. And
the Cardinals might be there too, by the way.
Yeah, sure. I mean, and, you know, look, maybe they do, maybe they don't, but they just won the World Series and
don't give me that tone right now.
What? Like the defeatist tone?
Yeah. It's like we're halfway through the year, dude.
I'm just saying we're at the midway point and I still have yet to really get like super pissed off about anything. So I guess that's all I mean is they won the World Series. I was swimming in the pool today. I have the replica banner flying over the pool. You know, it's like, things could be worse, Brendan.
I hear you. All right. Well, this has been the Cubs Related Podcast presented by Cubs Insider. You can subscribe to this podcast in iTunes by searching Cubs Related in iTunes. We are the first option that comes up. Please also rate and or comment and give us a review of the podcast. It really does help. And then Corey and I will be back after the Pirates series. We'll do a first half recap. We might get someone else on board for the podcast, maybe Evan from Cubs Insider. That
could be a really short show, though, don't you think? Here's the first half recapped. It stunk.
And moving on. Yeah. But we'll get into it. And if you guys have any topics about the first half recap that you're interested in us discussing, go ahead and you can tweet at either me or Corey. I am at Cubs Related. Corey is at CF Cubs Related. And maybe we'll throw it into the rundown for the next episode. See you then.